Yes, nod, thank you. Okay, it being 3 o'clock, I'd like to call the September 28th, 2021 Board of Adjustment meeting to order. And to begin with, I'd like to thank all of you for being here and joining us this afternoon. Ms. O'Connor, may we have a roll call, please?
Member Affinati?
Present.
Member Barcello?
Here.
Member Murphy?
Present.
Vice Chair Roach?
Here.
And Chair Dinkworth?
Present.
Let the record show we have a quorum.
Okay. May we have the Pledge of Allegiance, please? Will you all please rise and join us? Once again, thank you for joining us here this afternoon. And to get a little bit of the business out of the way first, restrooms can be found right outside through the double doors to your right here. There is a drinking fountain located near the restroom. If you wish to address the board on any agenda item or during the call to audience, please fill out a blue card at the back table and hand it to the recording secretary, Ms. O'Connor, who is sitting over here. I'm assuming most of you have done that so far. You still have time to do that if you wish. And at this time, we will have the call to the audience, and any member of the public that is here in person, this is not going out on Zoom, that is here in person can address the board on any issue not listed on today's agenda. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, individual board members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. Ms. O'Connor, I thank you. I have the blue cards, and I'm going to call them in the order that I received them here. First of all, is there
Chair
anyone?
Chair Dankworth, those are for the agenda item.
Okay, so these are separate ones. Is there anyone here that wishes to speak on an item that is not on today's agenda? A show of hands, please, if you do. There being none, we will continue now. Let me introduce the council member, any council members that are present here. And there is our liaison, Mr. Solomon. Would you like to address the board?
Well, hello. What I'd like to do is say welcome back, everybody. It's great to see everyone in person again. It's first time in about a year and a half. Welcome you to the newly remodeled council chambers. It's a lot more comfortable for all parties involved. We've added a lot more seating capacity. So just hope you enjoy the new environment and welcome back. And it's great to see you all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have reviewed the order of business, and we will now proceed as the items are listed on the agenda. Ms. O'Connor, will you please read item number one?
Review and approval of the February 23rd, 2021 regular session meeting minutes.
All right. Has everybody here had a chance to review the minutes? Thank you. May we have a motion to accept the minutes?
I move to accept the minutes.
All right. May I have a second, please?
I will second.
Please signify approval by saying aye.
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 The minutes are approved. Thank you very much. Ms. O'Connor, will you please have a roll call vote so that we can proceed?
Member Affinati?
Here. Aye.
Member Barcello?
Aye.
Member Murphy?
Aye.
Vice Chair Roach?
Yes.
And Chair Dankworth?
Present.
And motion passes 5-0.
Aye. Yes, aye. Thank you. All right. At this point, Ms. O'Connor, will you please read item two? Before I ask staff and the applicant to present, I would like to remind the board members and the public that this item is a zoning appeal to an interpretation. It is not, I repeat, it is not a request for a variance or to change the zoning. It is solely focused upon whether an interpretation issued by the Planning and Zoning Administrator should be upheld or reversed. Mr. Andrews and Mr. Biavella, will you please provide the staff presentation?
Chair Dinkworth, Ms. Ancona is going to read the agenda item first.
Okay, are you going to do it? Okay.
Public hearing, discussion, and possible action regarding a zoning appeal to an interpretation issued on May 27, 2021 that determined the applicability of a 75-foot height exception and other requirements associated with the resort site in the Rancho Vistoso Neighborhood 11.
And Chair Dankworth, Mr. Andrews is now ready to give the staff presentation if you'd like.
I'm right here, Chair Dankworth, and if you don't mind, I'll remove my mask so I don't talk like I'm coming out of a sack here. You've already addressed the first couple of things. My name is Joe Andrews. I'm with the Oro Valley Attorney's Office, and one of the reasons why you now have Mr. Holtzman as your counsel today, because I can't do both. You already covered a couple of the things. You're right. This is clearly not. They can't hear me? Okay, well, we'll pull this up. There is no button to push. I just got to pull it closer and move up or do something so that I sound louder. Thank you. You already covered the part. Yeah, you're right. This is not a variance. This is not a rezoning. This is most definitely an appeal. And that's important because you're almost comfortable, I think, with doing variances and following the five criteria that are stated in law. They don't apply here. With that in mind, there are a set of roles involved here. And the main role is staff, myself, Mr. Vella, will be advocating that Mr. Vella got his interpretation correct. The appellant will do their part to convince you that Mr. Vella did not get his interpretation correct. What's the Board of Adjustment supposed to do? Well, your duty is limited to basically making the determination, and state law is not really helpful here, to determine whether he got it correct or not. And that would mean, did he do anything wrong? Is this the wrong way to do it, or is it the right way to do it, and uphold his determination or not? Staff submits that Mr. Vella did his job correctly, and the Board of Adjustment will be compelled to uphold his interpretation today. There are also a few terms that are going to be thrown at you today, I suspect. First being an interpretation. Thank you. I think, yeah, there. That's the roles. I went through roles. I'm not pushing forward the presentation fast enough. First is interpretation. You don't hear that very often. A formal planning and zoning is it's a formal planning and zoning administrator decision. In this case, it was a finding by Planning and Zoning Administrator Vella limiting the 75-foot height exception to the resort site, and that limit being for a hotel use only. This is, of course, an appeal. You don't normally have appeals. The appeal filed by the property owners in opposition to Mr. Vella's interpretation today is the appeal. Now, I also suspect you're going to hear the term statutory construction. You may or may not. This is a legal term of art that deals with ambiguity issues. If something is ambiguous, you go through a statutory construction. Another one would be due diligence. Due diligence deals with researching and analyzing documents and determining what council actually adopted back in 1998. For Mr. Vella, this was an exercise in due diligence, not statutory construction, and basically finding that the limiting stipulation language was provided by the applicant in 1998. I'll turn this over to Mr. Vella to bring in some more of the information for you.
Thank you, Mr. Andrews. I'm Bayer Vella. I am honored to be the town's planning and zoning administrator, and I've been with the town roughly 20 years in the capacity of planning and interpreting zoning codes. So I want to walk the board through the due diligence process that we undertook to make the interpretation, as well as the due diligence process to defend the interpretation. So this all started with a formal interpretation relative to an ordinance that was approved by town council back in 1998. And there were several stipulations as part of that ordinance. And on your monitor, you can see the four sub-bullets. Those are the key stipulations that were developed and subject to this interpretation. Two things I want to point out about these stipulations. One is, if you notice, they're very specific. The ordinance actually customized parking for a proposal in front of council. The ordinance customized limiting the number of rooms. There was a specific proposal in front of council, and our sense, the intent of council, was that they were approving a specific proposal, not providing general allowances. The interpretation focus today is entirely on the fourth element in that list, and that's the building height. So you've received a packet with several hundred pages of documentation, and I'm going to do my best just to really dive into the focus of our assertion. Bottom line being that the way the ordinance was constructed leaves no ambiguity whatsoever. That council approved in its motion very specific references that any reader should be able to, can, through public documents, conduct due diligence, a step-by-step approach, to understand exactly what was meant and intended. And I also want to point out, before walking everyone through those steps, is that over the years, this ordinance has been applied in a consistent way. There have been development proposals on this property. And each time, the ordinance was applied in the same manner as what's described in the interpretation. So this is not unique. Staff's position is not unique. All right, whenever we're asked to take a look at a zoning code and when an applicant gives us a call and they want to understand the parameters that they need to work under in designing a development, our first step, always, there's nothing unique about this case. Our first step is always go straight to the zoning code. So when you do that, the text within the Rancho Vistoso Planned Area Development Resort Zoning has a section that describes building height. And you'll notice in the slide, there's a number 4 and a number 4A. They're two sets of building height numbers. So right off the cuff, it's very clear there are different standards for different things relative to building height. The number 4 part, which creates the overall standard for uses of 35 feet, with an exception where you have steep slopes, you can go taller to 44, that's the original code language from 1987 when the PAD was created. That's what was in place in 98 when the property came forward asking for an exception. Okay? So baseline is number 4, 35 feet. That is the baseline standard. 4A talks about a 75-foot height allowance for a resort site. And then the authors of the ordinance, part of the motion was reference to the ordinance, and in the code is that ordinance number, Ordinance 9838. So the due diligence is that a reader, a planner, a planning and zoning administrator, would then go to that ordinance to better understand how number 4 and number 4A work together. So step 2, and I call this a 4-step process that I'm walking us through. That's step 1. What's in the zoning code? Where does it take you? It takes you to step 2 to examine Ordinance 9838. And in Ordinance 9838, there's a lot of language, all caps, and you can see bracketed in yellow that a stipulation was embedded in the ordinance, a condition that the approval is based on what was requested. The quote is, as requested by OV998-2B. By that council embedding that in the ordinance, they made it a stipulation or a condition of approval. So step three is, well, what is OV998-2B? It's a wonky-sounding number, but that's a typical labeling sequence we use for all applications. They all get an OV number. This just happens to be the one that was used back in 98. So the next step in along due diligence, step three, is to look at, well, what did the application say? What were they asking for? What were they specific? What was town council considering? Well, the applicant made very clear as part of their submittal that the height amendment would only apply to the lobby area of a hotel. That's what was approved by ordinance and embedded in the ordinance as a stipulation. Step four of what we do, is typically do as planning staff, is really look at, well, how has this been applied in the past, especially something as old as 98? So we looked at a development plan approval for Ritz-Carlton in 2000, and most recently a pre-application. In both instances, this ordinance was applied in the same manner. It was all about a hotel lobby. And in 2000, that proposal for a hotel was approved by council, and the only area that had 75 foot was a hotel lobby. So at the end of the day, those are the steps of due diligence, and I'd like to pass this back to Mr. Andrews to summarize.
As I stated before, Joe Andrews from the town attorney's office. Now, this is a bit of a summary and a bit of a forecast. I mean, I expect that you're going to hear some things from the appellant today. You're going to hear about ambiguity, doubt requiring all decisions to be made in favor of a property owner. I expect you're likely to hear that the statutory construction requires that you find in favor of their applicant. I also expect you to hear that they believe Mr. Vella did not do his job correctly, and therefore he was wrong, and you need to hold in their favor. But what you did hear from staff, there is no doubt or ambiguity here. You just have to march through the documents and find out what happened. And when you do that, you find out that the scope of the 75-foot height exception has always been limited by the adopted 98 applicant stipulation to a hotel use, and more specifically, a lobby. Another bit of information, and some of this may come as a little bit out of whack, but it's all prior applications and approvals are consistent with Mr. Vella's current interpretation. This has not been an interpretation until recently, but before his interpretation, all the applications would have met this interpretation up until this one. The PAD language, Ordinance 9838, and application OV998-2, they're all public records. The town zoning code is a public record. The PAD is a public record. And they're available to anyone who desires to do their due diligence and march through the documents as Mr. Vella did. Now to try to tie things together a little bit. The PAD language has a direct reference in it. Mr. Vella showed you that. The ordinance has a direct reference within that it's being adopted as requested by the applicant number. And the applicant submitted that this was to be, and it was stipulated, that the height amendment will only apply to the lobby area of the hotel. And that is the limit of what the town believes is correct here. This was always limited to the lobby area of the hotel. Now I'm going to try to bring up the applicant slideshow. or not? No. All right, Malini, you got me. Okay, we're up. We're ready for you, Mr. Parsons. Good afternoon, staff, council, chair, members of the board. May it please the board. I have to start first with some procedural housekeeping. The Board of Adjustment is a creature, a creation, in fact, entirely of statute. A municipal board of adjustment has only the authority given to it by the statute, and that statute is 946.06. The board may only hear appeals from the town's planning and zoning administrator. An administrator is also a creation of statute. It is not the interpretation of just anybody at the town that this board may hear under the enabling legislation. So when Mr. Beyer signed his decision in May as the town planning and zoning manager, it did not trigger the jurisdiction of this board. Now, last Friday, we have a correction that says, well, he was really acting as town administrator. But the record does not reflect that. It reflects that he did take some actions as administrator, but that this particular opinion was drafted and signed by him as a manager. I had to take an appeal because it is possible the Superior Court could say, I did not raise that point, and it is waived. But I have preserved it, and for that reason, I believe you should consider whether you have jurisdiction over this appeal. The next part of the procedural due process is I'm entitled to appear before this quasi-judicial panel populated by folks with who are neutral. So if you feel you have been lobbied by others in the community ex parte, or if you have any other interest in this matter that makes you slightly uncomfortable, these are things to confer with your counsel about. There are other solutions. I have had other boards of adjustment refer matters to companion boards of adjustment in other municipalities or otherwise. It's not you're not bound up to decide this if you after conferring with counsel are uncomfortable. The process of reviewing an ordinance, which is a law, really goes to five steps. And the five steps here were not conducted nor attempted by Mr. Beyer, with the exception of the fifth step, which is what was called to you just now as due diligence. What due diligence is really, under the law, is an examination of legislative intent. It is the court's duties and yours as a quasi-judicial body. When you reach that fifth step, which I'll describe more clearly in a moment, to examine the legislative intent only in the most rare of circumstance. But before you get to that fifth step, you have four others that you must consider. The first is called the plain language doctrine. And I have submitted a supplemental brief that contains citations to this bedrock principle of statutory construction,
which is when the language is plain, the court will go no further. It shall not examine the legislative history. And by way of example, it used to be customary in the 70s and 80s that we would go back to the boards of supervisor and get affidavits from the then acting supervisors and submit those affidavits to the court and say, this is what I intended, this is what I was relying on, and this is what the statute means. That kind of analysis is regularly struck so often that it's not submitted anymore. Nobody does it. So to leap over the first four doctrines into the fifth, which was not performed correctly, even if you get through the other four, the fifth one requires that an analysis, not an advocacy piece of one side or the other, but a thorough, balanced analysis of both positions to decide whether it was clearly in one direction or another. Because if an ambiguity persists after that analysis, that's where, as pointed out by my colleague, it must be resolved in favor of the free use of land, which he did not do. Mr. Vella did not even attempt the other side of the balancing requirement on the fifth test. The first test being the plain language doctrine. And we can start here under plain language. We look at the actual ordinance. It says, in neighborhood 11, there is a different building height. Obviously, the resort district, which applies, there are many resort districts in the PAD, obviously, neighborhood 11 is a select location. While there might be other standards to those other districts, neighborhood 11 is plainly identified. It pertains to the building height, not to a hotel, not to a lobby. And your task is to simply apply the plain language doctrine to those plain words. If they can be fairly understood, they must be upheld. And I am here to have this ordinance upheld. In the resort district, a locational identification. Section 2 is interesting because it says anything in conflict with this ordinance is repealed. That would suggest that if there's a height for other buildings, they've been repealed. Aside from that, Section 1 is the first instance of plain language used twice, building height, resort district. Then in the attachment of the conditions to the ordinance, it says again, regarding the height limit for the resort site, again, no mention of hotel or lobby. Those words are words of modification. I will get to that shortly. The ordinance is presented to the mayor and council. It then comes back a second time and goes through the approval of the minutes, an exercise you just engaged in. And then a third time, it gets embedded into the actual PAD document. And this is the excerpt from the PAD document. Again, building height, resort site, a maximum building height of 75 is permitted by Ordinance 9838. So we have the initial adoption. We have the minute approval. We have its incorporation into the PAD document. What is that process like? At every step, staff reviews the language. The planning and zoning director reviews the language. The language is reviewed by my learned council's predecessors, by the town manager. In fact, the town attorney signed off on the ordinance form. And then by the mayor and council themselves. Five different reviews of the language. Three separate occasions. Thus, when Mr. Vella makes a finding that it is only applicable to a hotel, he is inserting a word that does not appear in those three locations reviewed a total of 15 times by his predecessors and the attorney's predecessors and the mayors and council. Thus, it is not an interpretation. It is a modification of a law. Mr. Vella cannot modify the town's ordinances, and this body cannot modify the town's. You have good powers, and I want to make sure, because the report that was given to you last Friday suggests that you can only reverse or uphold, but actually your powers are greater than that. You may decide an appeal. You may affirm in whole or in part, or modify, or make such orders and requirements, decisions, or determinations as are necessary with regard to Mr. Vella's decision. Elsewhere in the pad, the mayor and council and staff had no trouble identifying specific building uses and limiting those heights. This is important because we construe the entire document together. And if in other locations within the pad, the mayor and council have placed height limitations or relaxed them for specific buildings, that is evidence to you that they know exactly how to do this, and they did not do that in Neighborhood 11's resort site. Here's an example. H1C. The hotel located on 21D shall not exceed 60 feet. This is the Office Research Park, which is a CPI park. The hospital building shall have a maximum height of 36 feet, with patient towers with a maximum height of 75 feet. These are just three examples where the town, mayor and council, and staff show precisely how to limit a specific building, such as hotel, or in this case, hotel lobby. Following the adoption of this ordinance in 2002, the then owner, completed its part of one of the most important aspects of the agreement. It dedicated Honeybee Canyon to Pima County. There are consequences if we are going to undo an agreement and lower the density and height in violation of state law. And there is a separate state law under the Private Property Act and others that would be implicated if you elect to uphold a modification of an ordinance by a staff person. The second test after the plain language test, it's a legal term. I hate using them, but it says your body and the courts will not take cognizance of something de minimis or inconsequential. Whether this building, because it is of its topography, 65 feet or 55 feet or 75 feet, is of no moment, as it cannot be seen of any consequence to the outside. And what do I cite? I cite the planning and zoning minutes. It's my 30th item, dated June 30th, 1998. And these are the words from the chair of the Planning and Zoning Commission. Dennis Douglas commented on the 75-foot height request and thought the view shed should shield it from public view. He stated it was compared to the visibility of El Conquistador. There would be some spots along Rancho Viscoso Boulevard if you stopped your car where the building would be visible between the rocks. He commented you would have to be a mile away from the road, so a sliver of view would be very small. These are the words of the chairman hearing this ordinance. Three, for this body to act on a modification of an ordinance, rewrite it with new words, there must be a rational basis. Where is the rational basis? Rational basis is a pretty low bar, but without it, the power to zone and restrict private land is defeated. It is a fundamental prerequisite to the power to zone. There must be a rational policy basis. No policy basis is articulated by Mr. Vella, and he points to none, that would say that a transient housing facility labeled the Ritz-Carlton should have a relaxed height limitation. But a transient housing facility labeled Spectra should not. Why would we draw any rational distinction between a nursing home and assisted living facility for the infirm in our community, for our elderly in our community? In fact, I would suggest the public policy considerations are starkly in favor of the nursing and assisted living facility. It'll have a fraction of the visitors, a hotel will. It will send no one to Honeybee Canyon, a stated purpose in the amendment. No one is called to investigate a crime by the residents of a nursing facility, or rarely. It is a much more benign use, and it is an important, I would suggest critically important, public policy consideration. And in the absence of an attempt to even try to articulate a rational basis to draw a distinction between the two uses, I think adds to the basis to deny the request. Finally, there's a notion kind of wonkish about illegal spot zoning, and it's like that same distinction. But basically, if you had a zoning category that said barber shops could be 14 feet high, but women's salons could only be 12, that's the kind of fine point on illegal spot zoning the courts will not uphold. And that is what's happening here. Provided you get through these four, then you get to this fifth section of what they call due diligence, but what I call legislative intent. And they have contended to you today that hotel lobby has always been consistently the case. That is in error. I turn to their packet. Specifically, the notice for the ordinance. This is the notice that is posted. This is posted by staff according to statute. The courts, this body, take great interest in what was advertised to the public. In fact, that may be the most critical point of successfully upholding an ordinance, is how was it advertised to the members of the public. That advertisement, dated 8/19/98, reads, "The applicant requests approval to modify the planned area development policies to increase allowed building height and reduce parking requirements in the resort district." Period. There is nothing on this page, nothing that mentions, this is signed by Brian Modine, lobby or hotel. When the mayor and council undertook to review the development plan of which Mr. Vella spoke and of which he did not show to you, if you look at that development plan carefully, This is a formal document that is recorded in the office of the recorder, reviewed by every single element of development services and staff. The town engineer, the town manager, town attorney, P&Z staff, many departments, but ultimately the mayor and council. This is at docket 25, page 90. You will see the approved plat 2 years later with cross sections. And these cross sections on the top right corner are labeled by height. And the cross sections include the word lobby. The lobby is not the highest part. It's not at the 75-foot level. It's equal with the ballroom. It is lower than one of the resident towers. This is direct proof of a subsequent interpretation by staff and the mayor and council that the lobby restriction did not apply. The lobby limitation of the exception does not apply. There are others. There are implications from the ruling that don't meet or conform with what we understand to be ordinary common application of zoning law to projects. For instance, it is probable, because the original ordinance allowed it, that multiple restaurants would be located on the site, and is customary at this type of hotel, a restaurant or bar might have been located at the top. Moreover, should the property have ever been built as the Ritz-Carlton and subsequently converted to another use, it would be, by implication, the position of Mr. Vella that the top stories would have to be demolished. There is no precedent for that, that I'm aware of, anywhere in the United States. Multiple beyond the dedication of Honey Bee Canyon, a key feature to this community, multiple other promises were performed. This creates a vested right in favor of the applicant to proceed under the plain language doctrine. If a vested right is denied, there are consequences that are beyond this board's power to hear. The court would hear the vested right argument. The court would hear whether there is a violation of the Fair Housing Act for targeting what is obviously a facility for seniors. The court would hear an argument regarding whether this is an action targeting people with disabilities under the ADA. I am obligated. I hear snickers behind me. But it is important that I preserve these arguments or they could be deemed waived. I'm not suggesting that any of you harbor an intention to do any of those things. Ultimately, we are here to ensure, the Clifton Trust is here to ensure that you protect these important constitutionally protected vested rights. You may not participate in the modification of an ordinance. Affirming Mr. Vella's decision would be just such an act. I ask that you recognize that Mr. Vella acted as the manager, and for that reason you were without jurisdiction to hear this matter, that the modification of an ordinance is beyond the statutory enabling legislation of 9-462.06. You may hear shortly that we are trying, the Clifton Trust is trying to overturn an ordinance, and that is incorrect. We are here to enforce and uphold the ordinance as written. It is the actions of Mr. Vella that would overturn the plain language of the ordinance, and the standards that you will hear about overturning ordinance apply to him and not to us. I thank you, and I'm available for any questions.
At this point, are there any questions from the board members of either staff or the applicant?
Yes, Chair, I have a question. You mentioned vested rights. Could you expand on that, please?
Right. When the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Mayor and Council imposed conditions on a rezoning, it is the privilege of the commission and the mayor and council to undo that rezoning. They can vote to overturn the rezoning. Unless some of those conditions have been satisfied through a substantial change in position, typically the building of an entry statement, a mass grading permit, if there's been reliance on the conditions, and some of them have been performed to a point where it could be said it was substantially performed or something was done in significant financial reliance, then overturning the zoning ordinance in that circumstance would be a taking of a real property interest. If they overturn it before that work is done, there's no harm. There's no claim.
Any other questions from both the board members? Mr. Parsons, I'm sorry. Yeah. I have a couple of questions, if you would, please. The first question, you referred to the schematic on page 90 of your presentation, where you showed the height of the hotel lobby tower.
Yes, that was actually the packet that was delivered to you, and I had to identify it. It's the we tabbed them. It was the 42nd item in what I think is your 300-page submittal that staff gave to you.
All right. Well, what I would like to see, if at all possible, is a side-by-side depiction of the hotel lobby height in the site as proposed at that time, and what the proposed building would look like were that
I would absolutely be prepared to show that to you.
Do you have that ability to do so now? Is it possible to put that either on a large screen so that everybody could see it?
Chair Dankworth, I don't believe we have that ready for the screen, but he is bringing it up for you. And I would just like to clarify from staff that the development plan for Ritz-Carlton has the finished floor elevation in that table, not the height.
Well, I'd like to swear you in, but there is a height floor depicted. But we'll let the board decide. This is the document with the elevations on the side.
Could you walk across with it slowly, please, so we could see them side by side?
They're not to scale. This one is at 66 foot at the top of the parapet.
What you're showing us there is the building that your client is proposing. Is that correct?
My client's buyer, yes.
Okay.
Mr. Parsons, is this part of the evidence that was submitted previously?
I don't know if this got into our packet or not.
I'm being told it was not, and I haven't seen it in the packet. I don't.
Then we'll mark it and attach it now.
And if we could see that up close and personal, please.
I think a little closer. I'm going to walk.
Could you walk that in front of us as well, please?
I will. My apologies to you.
If it's in the packet, can you refer us again to the page that's in the packet? Mr. Parsons? Can you let us know the page in the packet you said that was submitted, if you know. Everyone has a copy of the packet with them.
It was the 41st item, and it is about 9 pages in.
This is the elevation above.
If you would like to see the other one next to it, then certainly ask for it again. Do you want to?
I thought you were asking.
No, I'm at, do you want
it?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
But we'll get it anyway.
Thanks.
Okay. Here we go. Excuse us for a minute, please, while we look at this.
Sorry.
Board members, I just wanted to let you know the development plan is attachment 3, page 247 in your packet.
I have a couple of other questions here. Could you please explain to us how you equate the need for a nursing / assisted living / senior residence home to adhere to the same requirements as the lobby of a resort hotel, which was not built there?
Well, both have entries. Both have a driving in court, circular court, typically. In fact, the footprint of this document, of the marked document, which I don't have a marked number on it. It was not marked?
We're going to include it into the documents that were submitted.
As I understand it, this elevation followed the elevation of the resort plan approved by the Mayor and Council in very much the same way. I would say also that when this plan was developed, I asked that from its perspective to draw in the intervening hills and peaks. And when they did so, it obscured this view. And we had intended to do a drive around the site with balloons at the heights shown on this, I'll call it the Todd and Associates Spectra number 21-7001, to show that this is not what you will see on the adjoining roads. You will see roads and mountains. When I say that a assisted living facility is the same as a transient housing for a Ritz-Carlton, except less affluent, I speak from experience. My father-in-law, Dr. Carl Gadoff, an MD from Toronto, 40 years a resident here, hospital attending physician, psychiatrist, was placed into his nursing facility and died the next morning. Both my mother-in-law and my father-in-law and my mother and father, my mother, passed in nursing facilities. I can say to you with absolute clarity, all of them are sold insurance policies. to pay for benefits for daily care in nursing homes and assisted living facilities that are priced well below the benefit. In other words, they paid for insurance they could never use in Southern Arizona. There is simply no facility that charges the amount of the benefit that they were entitled to. And so for the 40 years that he paid for that policy up, for the rest of his life in a nursing facility, he didn't even get out of the probation period. So I think this is a critical need in the community. And I think it would be a tragedy if we lost it.
Mr. Parsons, I would just remind you this is about whether or not the administrator's plan opinion should be approved or rejected, not whether there's a variance.
Mr. Holzman, we were not able to hear you down here.
My apologies. I just was reminding Mr. Parsons that this is simply a hearing on whether or not the administrator's decision should be approved, rejected, or modified, and this is not a time for pleas on the type of jury argument that he was making, perhaps.
Mr. Bella. Yes, please.
There are some incorrect facts that are being shared, and I'll make sure that the board and the audience are aware of what the facts are.
If I may be dismissed, you have no further questions?
No, please, none of this time.
So if I may, Chair and board members, within Attachment 3, is the development plan for the Ritz-Carlton. In that development plan within Attachment 3, I want to refer you to page 1 of 7. It's a site plan with a lot of information on it. So page 1 of 7 clearly depicts the lobby as the tallest part of the structure. You can see the numbers, the stories, 1 story, 2 story, 3 story, 4 story, 5 story. 5 stories only in the lobby area, period. I also want to point out page 5 of 7, that chart with 1 floor, 2 floor, 3 floor, 4 floor, the numbers next to it are all finished floor elevations. They're not building heights. So the way this was designed, that the lobby was absolutely the tallest, and that's what was approved at 5 stories, and that's page 1 of 7. So I wanted to make sure that was on the record. And secondly, I want to, if I may, make sure that we maintain our focus today on whether the interpretation was correct or not. There are a lot of externalities and side issues that have been brought up, and I just want to ask that we redirect our focus. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Mr. Andrews, did you want to say anything?
Chair Dankworth, members of the Board of Adjustment, Mr. Parsons went through an awful lot of what I called statutory construction. And if this were a statutory construction issue, I believe he's right. The problem is there is a stipulation that was adopted as part of the actual ordinance that it was included. Might as well have been a condition. The condition being it was for the purpose of a hotel lobby. We're saying that that statutory construction is not a necessary step. He's saying it is, and this is where we differ.
Thank you very much. Yes. Ms. Murphy. Mr. Parsons, would you please come up? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons. Are you asking this board to consider this facility as a hotel and or resort?
I'm suggesting that the distinction between the two is unknown for purposes of zoning. It is transient housing. They are both paying on a daily, weekly, monthly. Some hotel people stay for months and even longer. So I don't see the distinction, although it is defined differently in the code. So you do have a definition of resort, and you do have a definition of assisted living. But for purposes of the height limitation, I can see no policy or rational difference.
Are there any other questions by board members?
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Parsons, following up a little bit on what Ms. Murphy just asked you as to whether you see a similarity between such a hotel and a proposed nursing, assisted living, / senior residential facility. I think I'm hearing you say that basically, yes, there is a similarity there.
I do, Madam Chair.
Okay. May I point out, speaking very briefly from personal experience, because I live in a senior facility, that there is absolutely nothing transient about it, with the exception of those people who permanently leave us. That just is a comment which really has nothing to do with what we're here to discuss, but I did have to get that out.
Understood.
Yes. Mayor, Ms. Murphy has another question. Okay.
I may be dismissed.
Yeah, for the moment, yes.
For the town, could you please tell us the difference in code between a resort and assisted living? And thank you.
Gladly. Chair Dankworth, Member Murphy. So the zoning code distinguishes between the two very clearly. So one category in the code is known as senior care, and that includes the full suite from independent living, nursing, memory care, assisted living. So those are all different categories. Resort hotel has its own separate definitions or separate zoning category. What's not at issue today is that these two distinct uses, zoning code treats them entirely differently. They have special standards that are associated with both. For example, in senior care, there are additional stipulations relative to how much rec you have to provide, rec area. There must be a porte-cochere, et cetera, et cetera. There are separate standards for senior care. What's not at issue today is, and what we agree with the appellant on, is both uses are permitted in this zoning district, but they're two distinct uses. And the question before you today, the only question that's before you today, is back in 98 when town council was approving that ordinance, and by adding that stipulation to referring to the applicant's request for extra height, an exception for extra height, it was an exception for extra height for a hotel. Was that the correct call or not? That's our yes or no question today. So both uses are permitted. Both uses are distinct. Sorry if that's a bit of a long-winded answer, but I hope I got there.
Thank you. Thank you. At this point, if there are no more questions by the board, I'd like to open the public hearing. If you're here with us in person and would like to speak, please, you have filled out the blue cards, and I do have them in front of me, and I will go through them in the order in which I've received them. I will ask you, however, to make note of the following. I know that all of you who wish to speak probably have very important things that you wish to tell us. If, however, the person who has come up and spoken before you get your opportunity to speak basically has said the same thing that you intend to speak, I would ask that you please state that I agree with the prior speaker, so that by doing that, we will be able to get to as many of you as possible without it dragging on into the wee hours. And so with that in mind, the first speaker that I'm going to call up is Richard Thaler. Is Mr. Thaler here?
I have a presentation that will fit within 2 minutes, but I have a question that may not fit within the other 1 minute. Who had that packet? This is the most amazing case of presentation by ambush I've ever seen in my life, and I practiced law for 45 years. So that's my first question. Who had this incredibly extensive packet? I assume the board did.
No, we do not have it.
Does anybody except Mr. Parsons have it?
And that's a very good question.
Gentlemen, I submit to you that that's blatantly unfair.
Chair Dankworth, if I may, the packet he was referring to is the staff report and the attachments.
Thank you.
This is the hundreds of pages that he kept referring to?
All of the board members have the packet.
Yes.
That was submitted prior to this
Does any member of the public have that packet?
Yes, much of the packet was available on the website.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, on Oro Valley Projects, something or other is the website. And if you go and search there, this meeting, the agenda, and much of the packets, I don't know if all of it, there was many hundreds of pages that the board members received. But there was quite a lot of it on the website,
okay.
And it still is, so you can peruse it at your leisure.
Well, it wouldn't be possible to respond in 3 minutes anyway to his very, very long presentation, so let me launch into mine. There is a very limited issue here, obviously, and that's been adverted to, and I agree with that. And I want to just point out a few things that are in the part of the record that I got to see. I didn't know about digging into the website, and I'm sorry if I missed that. I did miss that, obviously. The resort site was all, at the time that all this was done, was intended for a resort hotel. It's right in the PAD. Section 1.1F of the Rancho Vistoso PAD states, Neighborhood 11, I'm quoting here, is a resort area located in the rugged terrain of the Tortolita foothills and includes a resort hotel site with a 27-hole golf course, tennis complex, and low-density residential units carefully sited in the rugged terrain. In addition to that, the Neighborhood 11 policies mentioned on page 1 of the zoning interpretation, there's a couple others. Policy 17 on page 28 of the Rancho Vistoso pad states, the increased height of the hotel may require aviation hazard markings and lighting. Immaterial whether it requires those hazard lightings or not, but the point is it mentioned again the hotel, and it's replete. All of the requests that the applicant made talked about a hotel. Nobody was talking about a senior care facility. Am I? Wow.
I believe that may be that your time is up. 3 minutes.
Wait, what?
Your 3 minutes are up.
Okay. Thank you.
Next card I have is for John Howell.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair and Board. My name is John Howell. I live at 14572 North Shaded Stone, which is in Oro Valley and in Stone Canyon. And Madam Chair, my mother-in-law is over at Splendido and has enjoyed many, many years there. And my father-in-law would still be enjoying him if he were still with us. I am here representing the Stone Canyon Homeowners Association Board of Directors. We support the correct decision of the Zoning Administration in this matter and respectfully request that you uphold the decision. We agree with your city staff, the adopting ordinance, its associated legislative history, and the statements of the developer at the time of the zoning change all support the intent to provide additional height only for the lobby area of the hotel. There is no ambiguity in the record of the purpose of the allowed height and its limitation to the specific land use. Allowing the height to apply to any use in the underlying zoning would be a change to the development standards allowed for non-hotel uses in the approved PAD. Such zoning change only should be allowed by the modification of Zoning Ordinance Section 22.3, requiring a full legislative process and public hearings. Overturning this decision would be an unlawful change to the zoning without due process in compliance with state law. The appellant confuses uses with development standards. The height allowance is a development standard that is specific to a particular listed land use, a hotel. The applicant at the time asked for a special height provision for their proposed hotel, not for other allowed uses. There was no intent in the record to allow for amended development standards for all allowed uses in the zone. Our homeowners would have likely inquired over the years about zoning for the subject site before making a purchase in our community. Certainly your staff would have told them, as they likely told the applicant if they asked, that the zoning on the site allows for 35 to 44 feet except for a future hotel which may have a 75-foot tall lobby area. They made purchase decisions based on that information. We are not today addressing our view on the overall proposal. This is a simple question of what the law allows, which is clear. If the applicant wants to change the law, there's a zoning amendment process to do so, the same one their predecessor used to add height for the hotel. It is unjust to allow for a bait and switch to avoid public input to change what the town's law allows. To conclude, our community of hundreds of residents asks you to rely upon your great staff, the advice of your great town attorney, and to see through the supposed legal arguments tossed up by the applicant as a smokescreen. The correct decision has been made. Thank you.
Paul Loomis.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and board members. My speech is being passed out to you also. If I exceed my time limit, which I probably will, be able to read on. I'm Paul Loomis, an Oro Valley resident, and I was a mayor of the town of Oro Valley from 1998 to 2010. I chaired the meeting where the decision to amend the general plan and the Rancho Vistoso PAD was made. First, I want to support and totally agree with the interpretation issued by the Planning and Zoning Administrator and urge you to uphold the interpretation. Second, I want to compliment the Planning and Zoning staff for an excellent report requiring significant research for a decision that was made over 20 years ago. Unfortunately, Oro Valley follows the state guidelines regarding how long the town is required to keep public records and the tapes of the meetings. Those have been destroyed. Their identification of the facts of the case is significant, especially when there is no one on the staff today that was there when the decision was made. I am impressed. Great job. Third, there was never any discussion of an alternate use of the resort site besides a high-end hotel. All discussions, proposals, and conditions of approval focused on the high-end hotel that was ultimately identified as a Ritz-Carlton resort. I would like to talk about some of the background that led to the approval of the amendments. Remember, this was over 20 years ago, and Oro Valley was a very different community than it is today. Oro Valley was growing fast. We were among the fastest growing towns in Arizona and the country. We were looking for commercial development to provide additional revenue to the town. The hospital, Ventana Medical, Splendido, did not exist, nor were they even in the planning stages. There was no building in Oro Valley that was 5 stories or 75 feet tall. The Tucson region was a resort destination with 4 resorts in the region, the Sheraton El Conquistador, soon to be a Hilton, Westward Look, Westin La Paloma, and Ventana Canyon. Every one of those resorts included a hotel, conference center, ballroom, and recreation amenities. Even the two future resorts, the Marriott and the Ritz-Carlton in Marana, included a hotel and access to a golf course.
Loomis, excuse me. I just want to check with the attorney.
Chair Dinkworth, it is Mr. Holmes.
I would like to allow Mr. Loomis to continue his commentary. Is that permissible?
I think everyone has 3 minutes. I think you need to stick to the...
Okay. All right. Well, then, Mr. Loomis, I do have to cut you off, but thank you very much, and we will read the rest of this.
Somebody want to donate 3 minutes?
I will. Yeah. The next speaker is Mr. Evan Thompson.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Board. My name is Evan Thompson. I'm a member of the law firm of Thompson Crone, and in your packet is a letter that we provided in support of the town's interpretation, and there's a series of, for lack of a better word, legal standing and items in it that we would implore you to read prior to your determination, as it provides specific rebuttal to the applicant and the applicant's legal arguments that they've made to you in their application. We represent the Friends of Stone Canyon, which are about 185 members or homeowners within Stone Canyon. And as part of that, I wanted to just give you my 10,000-foot view of where you are today. And that is that I think the town and the town's attorney and zoning administrator gave you the exact right analysis. And I think that they've laid out that this was part of a PAD and part of that specific neighborhood PAD, and that there was the statutory interpretation that Mr. Parson gives you doesn't apply. And in fact, their interpretation and their idea that you look to the plain language that then refers you to the application and all of the history that is well laid out in your packet. And I implore you to make sure that you look at that history, because it is really, really clear as to how they got to the idea that this is for the lobby and the lobby only. The second argument that the applicant made is that there is somehow ambiguity in the zoning ordinance. And this is part of the written argument that they've sort of backed away from now, but that argument is a red herring. First, again, looking at the history of the ordinance submissions, there really is no ambiguity, especially if you look at WLB submissions and communications that are within your packet. Secondly, the standard in which you should apply, and this is part of our argument to you, is whether there was substantial evidence to support the administrative's decision. That's exactly what you have here. So you have substantial evidence that supports that decision. There is no ambiguity. That evidence is clear, long, and well laid out. And recently, there was a supplement file that talked about, and Member Murphy asked about, as to whether or not this fits within a hotel or some other. Well, you wouldn't have a separate zoning code section associated with senior housing if it was meant to be part of the hotel. It would just be part of the hotel. So I think that, again, is a misdirection that you should probably ignore. So respectfully, the Friends of Stone Canyon and the accumulation and the part that we've provided to you request that you uphold the zoning administrator's decision and move forward in denying the applicant's appeal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Riggs, Ted Riggs.
I'd like to yield my time to the former mayor.
You may, and thank you.
I'm still editing some of this, but that's okay. Again, I'm Paul Loomis. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. A couple of quick things. Number one, the council was guided by the general plan of 1996. And throughout that plan, there's discussion of Oro Valley as a tourist destination and resorts as an attraction. At no time was the council considering any other use besides a high-end hotel. Honeybee Canyon was still an environmental issue in Oro Valley. Throughout the country, national parks, monuments, and public lands were being damaged due to overuse. This was a significant concern as we were planning the future for Stone Canyon and Rancho Vistoso. Stone Canyon was in the development stage. The golf course was still being designed and residential lots were being laid out. The roads were tentative and access to the hotel was being defined. During this time, the town, staff, council, and the developer worked very closely together to bring solutions to the problems. The idea that led to the building height change was the desire by the Ritz-Carlton to have an impressive entry into the hotel. It was explained to me as a first impression of a customer visitor to the hotel. Arriving at Stone Canyon, driving around the rock outcroppings, and going around the rocky hill to see the entrance of the hotel set back among the hills and the rocks. It was a very impressive picture. That concept, it was carried out at the Ritz-Carlton in Marana. You drive through a long entry road surrounded by desert and hills, turn the corner into the entry of the hotel. It's a great first impression. The lobby area of that hotel is on the second floor of a five-story section of the building, as seen from the back of the pool. While Oro Valley has evolved from a rural town to a suburban town, its values have not changed. We value our unique desert environment, its views, wildlife, and small town feel. We still believe we are a tourist destination. We demand quality development that is sensitive to our surroundings and to our neighbors. Every individual development is reviewed for its impact. I believe every approved five-story building has been separately, conditionally approved for its allowed height. The exception for the Ritz-Carlton was allowed as unique to this location and the hotel proposal for this PAD.
Mr. Loomis, I have to ask you to stop.
I got one more person coming.
Okay. Brooke Ashell.
Madam Chair, I yield my time to Mayor Loomis.
Yes, you may.
I am just about finished. Again, the Ritz-Carlton was a unique location and a unique proposal for this PAD. Alternate use, whether residential or commercial, should require a separate PAD amendment if it is not a hotel that meets the requirements of the approved development plan and conditions of the PAD. Again, I want to compliment the planning and zoning team for an excellent report. I would urge them to initiate a code amendment to better define the resort district as requiring a hotel and recreational amenities, similar to the definition in the revised 2003 general plan on page 24. I again want to urge you to uphold the planning and zoning administrator's interpretation, finding that it accurately represents the facts of the original decision of the town council. Thank you. And thank you for your patience.
Thank you.
And thank you all.
Terry Ernst.
I'm not sure how to follow this. I do empathize with you in this discussion, because it's very difficult to lose sight of the forest for the trees. And I think the reason we're here is to focus on the big picture of what's in the best interest of Oro Valley and its residents. I'd also add that there are a number of residents of Stone Canyon who are not here today. It seems often that these sessions occur in the summertime by plan or chance. And because of that, at least half of our residents are out of state. I'm sure you'd see an even larger group here if this were January or February. I'd also add that I think there are 90 building homes in the process in Stone Canyon, which have no occupants at this point. And I'm sure that those future residents also have a very strong interest in this process and the outcome of it. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Suzanne Dreyett. All right. Had you handed in a card?
I did.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Barbara Bardak. I live in Stone Canyon. I've been a member of Stone Canyon for over 20 years and a resident since 2008. When we purchased in Stone Canyon, we bought there because of the beauty, the luxury, and the privacy that it afforded. I'm here today to support that with the decision made by Buyer Vella is upheld. And I also wanted to comment on the word transient, because that's been used to define a hotel guest, someone with a brief stay. If you look up the word transient, it does imply brief or passing. Whereas at a senior facility, you are a resident, you are not a guest. There is a huge difference between a resort and a skilled facility, or even an unassisted facility. And I, like many of the people here, have had a parent who has lived in such a facility. They do not have access to the kind of resort activities that someone at a hotel would have. And again, I think you just need to focus on what was done, what's been said, and what the mayor, the prior mayor, Loomis, has described, and also what the two attorneys, or several attorneys, have described. There is a huge difference, again, between a resort and a skilled facility. But bottom line, we're really here to talk about whether or not the application, the appeal that is in place should be upheld, or whether the original interpretation should be upheld. And I support fully, as do I know most of my fellow residents in Stone Canyon, that you do uphold what has already been decided by the town. So thank you. Any questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amy Williams.
Thank you very much. My name is Amy Williams. I'm a resident of Stone Canyon. My husband and I moved there about 3 years ago. First, I want to say thank you very much to the town for their incredible review of all the documentation. It is not easy to do. Second, I support fully the interpretation of Mr. Vella. It's clear that he has done an incredible amount of diligence. The staff has done an incredible amount of diligence to be able to go back historically, and I think it's remarkable that we were able to get the former mayor to come in and offer his remembrances of what was said, what was done, and what the intent was behind the original determination. The last thing that I would ask you to do is, as you are going through your deliberation process, please pay very close attention to what the town attorney has given to you as substantiation. Yes, in the documentation, it does talk about a resort site, but included in all of the embedded documentation is the cross-reference to the information and to the specific stipulation associated with the reference to the hotel and to the hotel lobby. I think that's incredibly important in really getting to what the initial intent was and how to go about interpreting and supporting the interpretation of Mr. Vella. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. O'Connor, are there any more blue cards?
Chair, Sorry, Chair Tankworth, I just wanted to let you know there is an online speaker as well.
I just asked about that. And I understand.
No, they didn't join.
Okay, thank you. There being no new card, no more blue cards, and no online speaker, I'm now going to close the public hearing and end any more discussion from the audience towards us. I'd like to now open it up for member discussion only. Members, please let me know now if you wish to be heard on this topic. I will call for a motion at a later time. So at this point, I will entertain any comments you might have.
Yes. So I just want to make sure, absolutely sure, that this is about the height only. It's not about how you would determine what a resort site is. The height only. Okay. The other thing is, I just want to say that, I mean, there's the history shows from the meeting minutes that they were definitely talking about a hotel lobby only. I don't see any other you know what I'm saying. So I just, when this was framed, it was definitely all about the height of the lobby. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Murphy, comment? Question? No? Mr. Roach?
Yes. I see no ambiguity in the ruling by the town administrator.
Mr. Barcello, any comment or question?
No, Madam Chair. No.
I will add my 2 cents for whatever it's worth. I cannot see any issue of ambiguity in this, and think that the town, too, has done a remarkable job of researching and preparing for this. I do think also that since the issue of plain language was brought up by Mr. Parsons in the very beginning of the discussion, I cannot think of any clearer language, plainer language, less difficult language to understand or interpret than that which is used in the ordinance. And that being said, I am now going to entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion.
All right, thank you. Ms. Murphy, you wish to make a motion?
I move to uphold the Planning and Zoning Administrator's interpretation issued on May 27th, 2021, based on the finding it accurately represents the facts.
May I have a second?
Second.
Mr. Roach is seconding. All right. May I have a vote call, please?
Madam Chair?
Ms. O'Connor, are you going to call it or shall I?
Sorry, I can do it. But
Madam Chair, point of order.
All right. All those in favor say aye. Mr. Barcello.
Before I vote, I had one question for our administrator or our attorney, Mr. Andrews.
I don't know. Is that allowed at this point?
This attorney over here.
All right. Mr. Holtzman. Is that allowed at this point?
I don't think, no.
No, it's not. I'm sorry, Mr. Barcello, though. Would you give us your vote?
I vote aye.
Mr. Roach?
Aye.
Ms. Murphy?
Aye.
Mr. Affinati?
Aye.
And I vote aye as well. Thank you very much. The meeting is closed.